on San Francisco's Jewel City by author Laura Ackley. For tickets and information, visit annualprideconcert.org or call 415-255-1355.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So my more than splendid guest has just scooted in. We're all gliding into perfect synchronicity. I will be honoring the ambassador of the Sahrawi Republic in North America, Ambassador Mohammed Yeslem Besat. Is that good?
That's
oh, very good. I will bring him in a few moments. First, a weaving of context. He is just back from a meeting on Capitol Hill in D.C., and we want to bless that meeting retroactively. So it is a mysterious and beautiful sky-earth mythological time full of wonder. So I will be coming out to California. I tour Saturday, June 20th at 7 p.m. in Open Secret in San Rafael. It's the Scheherazadian serendipitous synchronicity change of heart solstice, and that will begin the Saturday, June 20th, 7 p.m. Open Secret. And then also late breaking news, Monday, June 22nd, a solstice council, 8:30 p.m. at the Tea Temple in downtown Fairfax, California, opposite the movie theater. Thank you very much, Tracy Bryan, and many other things that are self-assembling. But first, a little bit of the mythic news, the sky earth story that embraces us right now. Right now, at this moment, Mercury, messenger, intelligence, is stationing. It will go forward at 3:33 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Its image, its metaphor, is a radical magazine circulating liberating ideas, and so we're going to do that. Neptune, dreams, vision, yearning, the impossible, desirable, is also stationing now and will deepen tomorrow, tonight, 2:09 a.m. West Coast time. And that means impossible things are possible. So we also know that, you know, we're in an increasing field of synchronicity. Against all odds is completely possible. So we are always engaged in the restoration of intimacy and kinship with all aspiring to freedom. You know, over the years, we've been doing beautiful shows from the beautiful part of Syria as well as the troubled part, that we can feel intimacy with that. So now today's show is dedicated to the Western Sahara and the people of the Western Sahara, the Sahrawi, their nation movement. So again, feel your way into intimacy with that. The ambassador will guide us. But the Western Sahara is in the west. It is bordered on the north by Morocco, a little smidge by Algeria, Mauritania on its eastern border. And it has been a place of people striving for their own freedom from colonialism for many decades that we will tour through. It is considered Africa's last colony. It was given to Morocco and Mauritania by the Spanish in 1976, and more things that I know from a paper, but our wonderful ally, Ambassador Mohammed Yeslem Besat, will guide us even more. Welcome, Ambassador.
Thank you very much.
It's so wonderful that you skidded in.
It's wonderful to be with you, Caroline, and to be on your great show. And I send salams and greetings to all your great audience.
Salam alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
So wonderful. So you're meeting on Capitol Hill?
Yes. I am coming from a very great meeting with Congressman John Lewis, who was a great civil rights movement leader.
I'll come closer. Come a little closer to your mic. There you go.
Who was a great freedom fighter himself, was in the civil rights movement with Dr. King Jr., with Rosa Parks. He was one of the leaders of Freedom Ride. And he is such a big man who have contributed through many other great Americans in the liberation of Africa, the anti-apartheid movement, with the Angolan, with the Namibians, with the South African. And now he's joining the Western Sahara Caucus, which is a group of congressmen who are concerned about what's going on in Western Sahara.
I am so glad, and I'm so glad that you didn't heed my, like, maybe you could reschedule that. And now that's perfect. I'm so glad you did that. That was just the right thing to do. Because in reading, I think I told you, I have a wonderful friend. I've known her entire life since birth, who's now 20. And she wrote this really wonderful paper on the origins of a disputed territory, the formation of the Sahrawi nationalism in Western Sahara. It's a brilliant paper. Her professor is using it in the curriculum. So I'm grateful that our American youth are learning and teaching about your beautiful land, and may it be autonomous.
That's for our honor. We have a group of Americans, an increasing group, getting very concerned about this. We have this caucus in the Capitol Hill, but we have a group of concerned citizens in New York. We have another group in Washington. We have a group in Florida, in California, in Virginia. And every time there is a group of Americans concerned about Western Sahara who started solidarity groups and concerned citizens association in different states, and they all are, everyone is doing something about Western Sahara. Yesterday we just got contacted by a professor of arts in Arizona, who just came back from Western Sahara, who is doing a lot of great things about the issue. She was doing speeches to her students and to Arizonians. And this show that Carolina are hosting, it's one of the elements to raise awareness. You know, when I was ambassador of my country to South Africa for 5 years, this Montutu told me that when injustices, when good people know about injustices, it ceases to exist by itself.
I love Desmond Tutu. That's good. And no, because we do want to honor the beauty of your people, and at some point I have some music we can play in at the appropriate whenever we want to. But it's also good, you know, meeting again with Congressman John Lewis, and as you say, groups everywhere forming, and yes, we will absolutely, this show is dedicated to spiraling out to all of our dynamic listenership, which is again in California, but also global, again our listeners in Japan, mm-hmm. and in England, and in the Midwest, and in South Africa. Mm-hmm. I love South Africa.
Me too.
What a complex,
me too,
brewing place. I go, if I'd been assigned to South Africa by birth, I would glory in it, but it is not my assignment. But complex, roiling, again, but as you know, great beauty underneath that, mm-hmm. the medicine of those few enough people who have every reason to be bitter and who aren't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, like, yes, like Desmond Tutu, like,
yes,
Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela.
And so as I was reading through many things, aspiring to be prepared in case you didn't show up also, complexity, sense of futility among the youth now, yes? And happy to hear about Congressman John Lewis, because where many of the articles in The New Economist and the BBC and so on end is, they say that, well, Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell had some, you know, interest at some point, but since then, not much. No, you can pick up on that narrative.
Yes, actually, this issue of Western Sahara is very simple. It's a case of decolonization, a non-closed case of decolonization. It's the only colonial issue on the African continent that's still listed in the Decolonization Committee of United Nations. There are 17 territories. The biggest among them is Western Sahara, and the most contentious and problematic, because the one who occupied the territory of an African sister country of Morocco. It was also a story of revenge. Spain, instead of honoring its obligation, moral and legal obligation towards its colony, they chose to do revenge, and they divided the territory between our two neighbors, Morocco and Mauritania. With Mauritania now we have peace and good cooperation. The problem is Morocco, who have invaded the Mauritanian southern part and who has built the longest berm on the world, which is second longest after China Wall, of 2,700 kilometers, running, dividing the territory to two, running from north to south, with implanting there something, a Pentagon said it's something like 7 million landmines, making our country the most landmined territory on earth. And Morocco is not cooperating with the United Nations to solve this problem. Now, we are going to third year, there are no negotiations. They freeze the cooperation with the United Nations. They are not allowing Ambassador Christopher Ross to do his job of mediation and facilitation. African Union have taken a very strong position. And today, in South Africa, they are discussing this issue in the African Union summit. Like, they discussed it last January, and they issued a very strong paper of policy, which is based on that referendum must happen, where the Sahrawis choose freely their destiny. Human rights in Western Sahara must be protected through United Nations mission in Western Sahara, which is MINURSO, which is the only mission in the world that doesn't have a human rights mandate. And the third one, the natural resources of Western Sahara that Morocco is storing must be stopped, like the case with Namibia. United Nations must stop using of the natural resources to fuel the conflict, because Western Sahara is rich with phosphate, with petrol, with fisheries, and many other rare minerals, and Morocco is just stealing these resources with the complexity, with the complicity of some international company, multinational companies.
Excellent use of word complicity.
Mm-hmm.
Complicity is a very important word. I mean, whatever is going on, we are complicitous, and once we recognize that, we can inhale back our complicity from the undesirable story and exhale it into the desirable. And so it's our intention that our dynamic listening audience may realize that passivity can be complicity. So once we know more, as you guide us into intimacy with this land and its history and the people and all of that, that we can withdraw our complicity from its colonialism and exhale into its autonomy. it's rich in phosphates. There is offshore fishing. It is coastal. It is a. I don't know. There's also offshore oil. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the country is very beautiful, very rich. The people there are very peaceful. Now it's our 25 years of peaceful struggle. We did armed struggle till 91. We agreed with Morocco on a referendum. We did the peaceful struggle since 91 till now, 24 years, waiting this referendum to organize it. People are really tired of waiting, tired of non-respected promises. You know, we don't want a miracle. We don't ask for something impossible. We just want what we have signed with Morocco, which was endorsed by the Security Council of the United Nations, to be implemented. It's very simple demands. Let the people speak. Let the people democratically choose. If they choose to be part of Morocco, we are ready to accept that. If they want to be part of themselves, we have to respect that. Whatever the people want to have. And it's not a big population. It's 700,000. The voters, maybe 150,000 voters we are speaking about here. United Nations, when there is a political will, they can do that job in one day. But the problem is the lack of political will. The problem is the intransigence of Morocco and the complicity of France, which is unfortunately very supportive of Morocco. You mentioned Susan Rice and John Kerry. I have to say that John Kerry, when he was a senator, several times he have signed letters to the then President George Bush asking him to do this referendum and asking him for human rights. This is for his record was very good. But when he became president, we didn't see the same commitment. Maybe he is very busy with many other things.
You are very kind.
Susan Rice, when she was ambassador in New York, she tried once to do a human rights mechanism to give to MINURSO, a human rights mechanism to protect the human rights in Western Sahara. But Morocco's refusal and France's complicity aborted that attempt. She knows the issue. She knows the issue very well. She has done many things about African issues, about other African issues. Now she is in a powerful position to do more. We hope that she can do more in this administration.
And what is your sense? I mean, certainly, you know, in the cynical world, okay, many stories, all stories guide us to all stories, and so again, people without a with an identity, again, forged from many tribes. I want you to come back on that. Mm-hmm. But like Palestine, mm-hmm. really, I mean, all stories guide us to all stories, mm-hmm. right now, which is why, you know, the Western Sahara is important, but it's also resonant with mm-hmm. many circumstances, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the issue of I like John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, very much. But one would imagine that the countries around, you know, again, America, Morocco, Mauritania, they will want some oil, they will want some phosphates, they will want some access to the resources. Mm-hmm. So it's mm-hmm. and again, the oil was discovered maybe a decade ago, mm-hmm. adding more mm-hmm. like.
Actually, the resources are always a blessing and a problem in the same time. The problem that we are, and we have said this officially, we are ready to share and we are ready to cooperate with our neighbors, Moroccans, Mauritanians, Algerians, even the people of Canarian Islands, who are good friends, of our good neighbors and good friends for us. Let's solve this problem. Let's have a democratic solution. Then we can cooperate and we can enjoy whatever resources we have. The resources we have are more than we need. The problem is the greed. The problem is the selfishness. The problem is the denial of the existence of the others. The problem that this government of Morocco and this king of Morocco refusing to do this democratic solution, refusing to honor promises that have been written and signed by his government. And it's a really, really, really problem. When it's about our neighbors, we have three neighbors, Morocco, Algeria, and Mauritania. With Algeria and Mauritania, we have a very good relations. We have a good cooperation. Really, really, very, very, very happy and satisfied about it. The problem is Morocco. And Morocco have been a bad neighbor with all his neighbors. He has war with Spain. He has war with Algeria. He has war with Mauritania. He has war with us in Western Sahara. And it's always because they are claiming more territories from others' one territory.
Right. And so the long-term tension between Morocco and Algeria increased, apparently, according to my friend Alicia Alloway's great paper, because Algeria took in refugees, right, from Western Sahara.
When the war broke, when Morocco signed with Spain to divide our territory in 75, people have nowhere to go, because Mauritania was part of the conflict, Spain was part of the Madrid Agreement. Morocco was part of it. The only neighbor that wasn't part of the war was Algeria, and that's why people fled to Algeria in 75.
So the actual circumstances of the Sahrawi people right now is in desert camps,
yes,
very
yes.
unfortunate.
Very difficult conditions. The Sahrawi is now divided between two. People who live west of the Berm or east of the Berm. Yeah. West of the Berm are under Moroccan occupation. They are treated like second-hand citizens of Morocco. Their human rights are violated. And those human rights violations are widely reported by Amnesty International, by Kennedy Center for Justice, by Freedom House, by Human Rights Watch, by any human rights organizations in the world, there is a wide consensus among all these human rights organizations that Morocco has been through years doing genocide against the Sahrawis, where the National Court of Spain have opened a case against Moroccan officials about genocide. The people live east of the berm are divided between two also. In the liberated territory, which is small villages and mainly nomadic, and in the refugee camps in southern West Algeria, just across the frontiers of Western Sahara, in the most non-hospitable conditions, in the worst climatic conditions, where heat, as we speak, reaches 53 Celsius, which is 135 Fahrenheit, which is a lot, where there are no water, no trees. The desert of the desert is that place. And for 40 years waiting their right of self-determination to be respected and to be honored.
And also I invite our dynamic listeners to Google, again, music of Western Sahara and mm-hmm. the Sahrawi people. And you'll see the bleak hardship circumstance, but still, what a beautiful people.
Mm-hmm.
And the women with beautiful clothes,
yes.
And the music. And there's a film festival.
Yes, Fi Sahara. Yes. That's the yes. only film festival right. that goes in a refugee camp.
Right.
The only remote, the most remote film festival. It's the only solidarity action in this multi-billion industry.
Right.
They don't do any other solidarity activity besides this Fi Sahara, where many very good-hearted and noble artists and actresses.
Well, Pedro Almodovar.
Pedro Almodovar supported it, but also Bardem, Javier Bardem and his wife Penelope Cruz, and Danny Glover.
Ah, uh-huh.
Danny Glover.
Oh, you can count on Danny Glover in all circumstances.
Yes,
like
and
John
many actors from all over the world.
So I saw the history. Is that going to take place in 2015 as well?
Yes, every year in April, in the Easter time in April.
Oh, so it already happened?
Yes, they take a charter flight from Madrid straight to this refugee campus.
Wow.
They stay 1 week, and the winner of the best movie or the best actor, he will get a camel, a white camel.
Oh,
yes, it's not something very fancy, but it's very unique.
Oh, it is
unique.
very fancy. I've learned in my time in Syria, camels are very valuable.
Very valuable.
And a white camel, my goodness.
Yes,
I hope they treat it well, or I guess
yes.
they keep it there in their name. But also, you know, part of, again, my great 20-year-old friend Alicia Alloway's guiding. Hello, she's in Morocco now. Hello, might be listening. Morocco might be listening now,
yes,
on the web. You know,
would
we go,
be?
Hello, yes. May the walls dissolve. But part of the rich complexity of colonialism here is that the king of Morocco gave some scholarships to the young, Sahrawi mm-hmm. youth. And it is, she says, the bilingual intelligentsia who go abroad on their pilgrimage for education. And there they find a kind of solidarity across tribal divisions, and they become, you know, more clearly understanding colonialism and therefore more unified when they come back. So this is a very complex and positive irony,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
That the colonizer is actually providing inadvertently the means whereby the colonized identify themselves and can be coherent.
Yes, it's always the tyrant will strip you from your rights, then he give them as a gift to you. He will put you in jail, then he will pardon you. He give you the freedom, which is a natural thing for you, but he give it back to you, and you celebrate as a gift from him. You know, it's very sad that maybe Western Sahara is the only territory in the world that they don't have university. Neither Spain nor Morocco build a university in this territory. The Sahrawis have, in the occupied territory, have to go to Morocco to look for universities, or they have to go to Mauritania or Spain or Algeria or another country, but they can't do their university in their homeland. It's such an unfortunate reality.
So if we're going for miracles, or even just sane, reverent common sense, we would see a university.
Yes.
We would see a unicorn.
I can see it already.
Ah,
I can see it already.
Splendid. Yes.
I can see it already that very soon, very in a shorter future, we will have a university, we'll have peace, we'll have freedom, we'll have justice done in Western Sahara.
Well, let's walk through the university that is in your mind a little bit.
It's a university in Lyon, the capital city of Western Sahara, where people are, where education is not something done for strange ideas, but it's very linked to the tradition of the Sahrawis for their needs, for their culture, for their economy. It's a university that built for the people, in the people, to serve the interests of the people. You know, what I like to see, faculty of desert agriculture, like to see something, faculty about phosphate mining, something about fishery industry, you know, something about eco studies, how to live on this earth without harming it, without destroying it, but rather to conserve it and to make benefit
of
it.
And you know what's also heartening is my friend Alicia Alloway and a number of her friends, they began studying advanced Arabic in public high school in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I would go there now. This is really good. And now at college, they're in advanced Arabic, and they are studying desert agriculture, alleviation of refugee things. I mean, these are young people coming up with Arabic and kinship and, again, wanting to contribute and to weave ingenious solutions, you know, into these places. So this is very heartening.
Yes. The Western Sahara is a unique reality where there are Arab-speaking, but Spanish-speaking and French-speaking. They are the bridge between Africa and Latin. They could be the bridge between Africa and Latin America, between Southern Europe and Africa. They are Africa, but they are Latin America because of the Spanish-speaking. They are Arab, the only Arab Spanish-speaking nation, where our neighbors are Francophone, and Anglophone Africa is not far from there. So actually, this small country, with the complexity of its history, with the uniqueness of their assets, it will be a great added value to our region and to our world. And, you know, the Sahrawis also are unique in terms of their culture. The women have historically played a major role in the community. They are leading the community. It's maybe one of the few societies where they are free of gender abuses or discrimination against a woman or beating women or crime. All these kind of things, you don't find them in the Sahrawi society.
So in the university that you are conjuring, and we're seeing it with you, women are going.
Of course. There is nothing Sahrawi without a very strong presence of women.
Excellent.
Yes.
That is very wonderful. So we do have some music lined up that we'll use a little bit for our break music. But then also, yes, found these wonderful Polisario songs in Spanish. You know, some sung by women. We'll see if what we can weave into play. But again, you know, this show is dedicated to, yes, guiding us all into intimacy with this part of the world, going, now we can see it. You know, again, there it is, you know, on the west is the Atlantic Ocean, and there's the berm, the 2,700-kilometer berm. And certainly, you know, may all walls, you know, again, in Palestine, dissolve. And as you say, you know, may these places be, you know, confluence of learning and, you know, and prosperity for the entire region, which is what Jerusalem could be if it was an international peace capital, you know,
which has always been.
Yeah,
some time ago. Yes.
Exactly.
Yes.
So we do love that. And so we are dedicated, you know, here to, you know, intimacy, knowledge, critique, and then vision, which you're already bringing into play about your deepest desire, your people's deepest desire. So how long have you been ambassador from the region to this
to United States.
Yes, exactly.
That's my third year now.
Ah.
This is my third year.
And we, of course, met through Medea Benjamin.
Great friend of us, Medea Benjamin, who I visited Western Sahara in 74.
Oh, my.
When it was still a Spanish colony, and she's a young student going hippie, traveling in North Africa, and she ended up in Western Sahara.
She is indefatigable. And I have a piece also from her as well, and Phyllis Benyus too, on how to deal with ISIS in peaceful ways. We'll see if we have time to bring that into play. But and that's why I love the university and the music and the film festival and the public concern that we can dissolve the aggressive. But you said there hadn't been violence in some time, but I thought that there... Really? I thought there was, even in the 2000s, even a few years ago, there was some people killed in Iraq.
Yes, Morocco attacked the peaceful, that Noam Chomsky said, the genesis of the Arab Spring.
Yes.
When
hold that thought. We want to come right back on the genesis of the Arab Spring, actually starting in the Western Sahara. Our great guest today is Ambassador Mohamed Yaslem Beysat from the Office of the Sahrawi People in North America, Western Sahara. And we are going to have just a little bit of break music from there. Yes, we are. Here we go. Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Today we are hosting Ambassador Mohamed Yaslem Beysat from the Office of the Sahrawi Republic in North America, representing his people of the Western Sahara, that we may feel kinship and intimacy through music and beauty and their struggle, the last colony in Africa. And again, may it be that the wall, the largest wall, second to the wall in China... Oh, you say. Right where we took a little bit of break music from the Western Sahara. Does that sound like Western Sahara music to you?
Yes, it is.
Excellent, good. Yay, YouTube. And then some, much of it also in Spanish, so Spanish and Arabic.
Yes.
Which is such an interesting theme. I mean, it's the Arabs moving into Spain that really bring culture and education and that confluence. Yes.
It's the Sahrawi... the only Arab Spanish speaking nation, as I said before.
Yeah.
But the relation between the Sahrawi society and the Spanish society is a unique relation. There is a big chemistry. They adore each other.
Mm.
They respect each other. And despite the colonialism, despite the position of their government is very bad, I have to say that the society of Spain, left, right, center, they all have been very supportive to the struggle of the Sahrawi people. Artists, singers, members of parliament, mayors of cities, in every single Spanish city, there is an association of solidarity with the Sahrawi people. Thousands of Spaniards come to visit the refugee camps.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
In what capacity?
As a citizen.
They just
know.
Come to visit.
And Sahrawi kids, they pass their summer holiday in Spanish families. Yes, the solidarity movement charter planes full of kids to pass what they call them vacaciones de paz. Peace vacations, where they spend 2 months with Spanish family. Then in winter, the Spanish families come to visit their kids
in the refugee
in the refugee camps and live with the refugee camps for 2 weeks, 10 days. And this relation is beyond culture, beyond religion, beyond language. It's just a relation of love, cooperation and mutual admiration between the two peoples and the two nations. And it's a very, very, very good exemplary relation.
So music may come from this as
Yes, well,
the confluence, the syncretism. Because it's also crucial. I mean, it is so much, you know, in which everything's interrelated, but the medicines of what we want now in the world are exactly that syncretism going, who brought what beauty to this place? And it's like a great friends in Syria, we've devised beauty poker, meaning, or blessing poker, may it go well for you, may it go even more well for you, and here's beautiful music from our people, that is beautiful, here's beautiful music from our people. I mean, so you're saying this is going on, there's much good stories underneath the harsh reality of actual intimacy. So right before the break you were talking about, and I was reading, and you certainly know more, about many people think that the Arab Spring actually began in the Western Sahara, not so much in Tunisia.
It's Noam Chomsky, a great respected scholar and a well sought after.
Yeah.
He said it repeatedly, I think 3 times in his lecture. And he's right on terms, because October 2010, exactly 9 October, the Moroccans attacked this peace camp, which started in September. Early September 2010, the citizens of Lyon City went out of their city and built a camp of something like 30,000 khaima, 30,000 tent, to protest the Moroccan occupation, to ask for more jobs, to ask for more human rights, and that camp was for 40 days. They are there, and the government of Morocco started negotiations with them, and they believed that there are negotiations, but at one morning, at 10th of October, the military, the army, the police, they all attacked that peaceful camp. And there were a lot of violence. Some people died, some people were injured. They burned, actually, the Moroccans burned this peaceful camp that they have been in negotiation with for 15 days. In one morning, they just decided, let's do it violently. And they attacked that camp. Attack against that peaceful camp sparked violence in the city, and the city lived 2 days of very extreme violence. That was the 10th and 11th of October. Morocco fired Al Jazeera because they reported about it. And they fired some Spanish journalists who came and fired. And there were an American journalist, John Thorne, who reported to the National magazine. He also wrote about it. Then it happened, the Jasmine Revolution in Tunis. Then they closed also Jazeera channel like the Moroccans did. And that's, I think, Chomsky is very right that despite this, this was a huge, because 30,000 in Western Sahara is like a million in Egyptian proportionally, because the population of the territory is so small. But 30,000, in terms of the size of the society, is a huge mass demonstration. It's a million, like million goes in Cairo.
Yes. So the Arab Spring, and do you think, you know, the Arab Spring, and there was Medea, of course, in the middle of Tahrir Square, and all of in her indefatigable way, so, the, you know, Arab Spring, yes, and I do remember, you know, part of the poignancy in talking to a Syrian friend of mine going, Arab Spring in Syria? And he goes, no. No, you'll see. This is not going to work out well. The opposition is not organized enough. You know, every mercenary in the world will come in. And I, as, you know, less informed, I was like, no, democracy, Arab Spring, but... He was right.
He's unfortunately, that's
unfortunately.
Very sad.
So, and very sad, and so. Even in Egypt again, so it, you know, a moment ago, and a great equality moments in the, you know, and then do you think that the Western Sahara has much medicine to contribute in their equal regard for women? That may be a sine qua non for a successful
of course,
rising up.
Of course.
Well, I'm glad you.
Polisario has been an organizer. If it wasn't for women, Polisario will not have been a huge organization. The one who made the Polisario national organization is when women joined the members to be members of Polisario in 75 during the visit of the United Nations, where it was a huge surprise where these thousand of women just went to Polisario demonstrations against the Spanish police and against Spanish army. And then Polisario became the representative, legitimate representative of the Sahrawi people. He has that credential thanks to the women. Polisario is more than anything else is a woman organization and student organization, because those are the ones who built the organization and who have been funding it and supporting it and who have actually done the most of the struggle.
And it is part of the unique circumstance of your people and the threads that connect it to everywhere. The Kurdish women, you know, fighting and you know, it's Kobani, you know, but you know, and the ISIS Daesh people saying we don't want to be killed by a woman because then we won't go to paradise, and the Kurdish women were going, we're going to kill you, get out of here now. But again, their model based, they apparently inspired by the brilliant American anarchist Murray Bookchin, they have a model for a truly egalitarian society, and you're saying, you know, Western Sahara also. So people rising in that way. So the Polisario Front, correct me, one it says it really kind of was born in a sense or consolidated May 10th, 1973.
True. Okay. It was in May 10th of 73 in a bordering town of Mauritania that borders Western Sahara. Western Sahara was then still a Spanish colony. So some students, some workers in the Fos Bokra, the phosphate miners, some old members who in the anti-colonial resistance in the 40s and 50s, they all met in one place, and they've done this organization which started fighting for the liberation from Spain. But in 75, May 75, Decolonization Committee of United Nations sent a delegation, a fact-finding mission to Western Sahara. They call it Mission of Simon Aki, the ambassador of Ivory Coast, with Marta Jimenez from Cuba and another man from Iran. So that delegation came, and it was a surprise that the demonstrations were thousands of women waving Polisario flag. So in the report of that fact-finding mission, they testify that Polisario is the most prominent organization in the territory, and it's thanks to the women and student participation, and Polisario since then became the legitimate representative of the Sahrawi people, recognized by United Nations as such.
So there is such complexity here, and you have great complexity of spirit to be able to be an agent for the goodness in this region and to be the ambassador. Do you know the Moroccan feminist Fatima Mernissi?
Yes, a great writer.
Okay,
yes,
okay.
Yes,
oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
Writer, yes.
So I would think that she would be an intriguing ally.
I don't know. You know, in Morocco is the system that govern in Morocco, they call it El Makhzen, which is a very medieval, old style of governorship that everything is central and in the hand of the king. And there are three things You cannot touch them in Morocco. Three taboos. If you touch them, you go to jail, you lose your nationality, you'll be in a, which is the monarchy. You mustn't criticize the monarch. It's a sacred. Right. The religion, it's a sacred. And that Western Sahara is Moroccan. If you challenged one of those triangle of Bermuda, you find yourself in jail, you find yourself losing your job. Sometimes even they cancel your Sarfati.
But of course, I think Fatima Mernissi, I think she's a cousin to the king. I think there's a blood relation. But she, of course, is in America, so she could.
I know that Abraham Sarfati, great Moroccan, originally Jew, great human rights defender, he went 16 years in jail. He and me and his friends, his organization, the only condition they gave to them, that they sign a statement saying Western Sahara is Moroccan, they leave them from jail. Wow. 16 years, Carolina, wow, from their life. Wow. They wasted in jail because they don't want to give up on something they believe in, which Western Sahara should be free. And that's really unforgettable help we get from our brothers, the Moroccans.
So the one of the reasons I brought up Fatima Mernissi, that's a great writer, and great interesting, you know, wearing high heel thing, mini, you know, she says, you know, in a brief conversation we had, and I hope to have more, but we said, you know, anything that's anywhere is everywhere, it just looks different. So she said, in America, the burqa is size 6. I mean, it looks different, but it's a prison. It's a prison of self-display, but it's still a prison. But part of her dynamic, and here we go into technology and radio and the internet and the Polisario, she was saying, you know, many, many years ago, about, you know, the power of Islamic women in North Africa. Once they had radio, once they had the internet, you know, they had their intellectual freedom, mm-hmm, and that all the other freedoms would soon follow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it seems important also. So, well, people talk about speed capitalism brought by radio, but is Western Sahara, is it intrinsically capitalistic, or what is its aspiration?
The economy of the country is in a special situation because of the Moroccan invasion to the territory. They have destroyed any economy of the territory. They are distributing things, handouts to people, so people couldn't rise to defend their rights. Actually, the economy, I can't describe it, because Morocco is stealing the resources. It's not giving jobs to the Sahrawis. The unemployment rate is something like 35% of the population doesn't have jobs. And the jobs they are giving to people, I tell you, you are a teacher, but we will pay you as a teacher, but you go and stay in your house. You don't work. Yes. To take out of the people the courage of working, that he is a citizen, that is contributing in a society. No, we pay you, but just go and sleep.
Well, that's happening in Palestine now. Mm-hmm. Part of the imperfection of Hamas. They're not paying them. It's actually the reverse. Teachers, you work and we won't pay you. Mm-hmm. You can stay home or you can work, but either way, we won't, mm-hmm, pay you. So many complex things. But the radio, is there internet in the refugee camps?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Now, in the time of 3G and 4G, there is internet in every tent. Every nomad has his cell phone. He can, like, maybe some of them, they are watching, hearing us.
Hello.
Now, because,
hello,
I've sent them link.
Oh, that's
the
great.
You
that's
sent
great. And also, nomadic culture. I know, again, deep friends, and we send them, you know, well-wishing the Bedouins outside of Palmyra in Syria. And we go, oh, may you be well and may you be safe. So Western Sahara, many tribes with their own differences, somewhat resolved again into a coherent identity. Mm-hmm. But these were people who once had vast ranges of wandering, again, not fettered by national boundaries. They would wander into what is now
known as... This is the sad thing of our modern age.
Yes.
Some time ago, the Sahrawis will move from Nile to Atlantic, then they will go to the market of Marrakesh or Bashar in Algeria or Adrar in Algeria, then move south to the what they call the Sweet Sea, which is the Senegal River. So they have a vast space, which is now called Mauritania, Senegal, Niger, Mali, Chad, Libya, even southern of Egypt. They have this vast space where people and cultures and tribes and seasons and markets are happening. But the colonialism have interrupted this way of life, have brought with him frontiers and nations and nation states, and have brought colonialism brought with them the ID card and the post controls and the frontier control and all of that nonsense, which reduced the citizen space, but also reduced the pastoral for your herd and for your cattle, and by the end took part of your heart and of your mind, of your identity. You know, now your brother become Mauritanian, the other brother come Moroccan, the other brother come Algerian, the other brother come Malian. And just last year you were all seeing each other, going from wheel to wheel. When he trains there, you go there. When he trains by us, you come by us. But this is the new life of humankind. The restraints that the humans put on themselves, unfortunately.
The restraints, no, and appropriate grieving, mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, Palmyra brought to its height on the Silk Road by Queen Zenobia, you know, and still, and may those things still be there. But when you're there, you would see signs going, and if you are going to North Africa, follow that star and go left. And if you're going back to, you know, Tibet, go follow this way. I mean, the idea, again, of what we want, the confluence and the caravanserai and mm-hmm. the souk and the mm-hmm. cross-pollinating mm-hmm. of ideas and people and cloth mm-hmm. and spices, mm-hmm. you know, all of that. So, you know, how do we kind of reinvent that in some way? And I suppose we go, well, there's, you know, there's a toxic aspect to the internet, but there's also a democratic aspect mm-hmm. to the internet too,
true.
Going
true.
A caravanserai of ideas.
True. That's why the solidarity movement do this caravan. Solidarity caravans, which go from Bilbao in northern Spain and drive all the way to Western Sahara.
Oh, I want to go.
Yes, yes.
Right, that's what a good idea.
Peace caravan now. And then the Sahrawis in 88, they did a cultural caravan that some trucks with group, musical groups, movies, and they drove from Western Sahara to Timbuktu, to Bamako, then they went till Kano in Nigeria, and they drove back with a different way, passing by villages and cities, singing and showing movies.
That's great.
Yes, yes.
Do you know a film called The Prince Who Contemplated His Soul? It's a great, it's one of my favorite movies in the world. It's in Farsi, but it was made by International Thing. But it's a Sufi meeting. It's a fantastic soundtrack. But we're seeing your university, and we're seeing a fantastic mm-hmm. film of this caravanserai mm-hmm. and this irresistible invitation. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have just a moment, oh great board up, to play just a smidge of the Sahrawi people, women singing, their freedom song. Just a smidge.
Cielo.
Does that sound like your people?
Yeah, this is a Sulaima song. It's a duet between Sahrawi singer and Canarian, our neighbors from Spain. Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we're syncretizing.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes, yes.
But I love your vision again of that. It's, you know, it's Arabic and Spanish and a little bit of English. You know, fusing in this great beauty. You know, bringing the beauty of these beautiful complex languages together. That is wonderful. So, again, your deepest dreams. Doing the Mythic News. You know, noticing the Polisario Front, a birthday in a sense, May 10th, 1973, and we'd say, you know, today is kind of or this whole time period right now is a kind of miracle time for them. It could be that, you know, much of what they dedicated to will come to pass. Do you feel a sizzle of possibility?
Yes, I think the situation is changing in Western Sahara, but also it's changing in the region, in Morocco and in Algeria and Mauritania. The world is changing. I think there is a new dynamics. You know, the colonial exercise that Morocco is trying to do, it's beyond his possibility, beyond their financial policy possibilities and political possibilities. Today, the leaders of African Union are meeting in Pretoria. One of the hottest issues they are discussing is this Western Sahara, where they will take a very strong position on it. The draft resolution on Western Sahara is the strongest ever taken by the African Union, where they call for an immediate referendum to happen, a immediate stop of the plundering of the natural resources, the immediate control and monitoring of human rights in the territory. I think all of this is taking note of what's happening, and I think also what Morocco is obstacling, not only the freedom of Western Sahara, they are obstacling cooperation in North Africa, integration in North Africa, and integration in Africa as a whole by the end. I think the wind, the desire, the aspirations to have a peaceful, democratic North Africa, that push is stronger than Moroccan greed and the Moroccan intransigence and the Moroccan hold of the territory.
I mean, is it just the resources, or is it a kind of pride?
I think pride is just to hide the greed of the resources.
Okay. So they are ample, but we can imagine autonomy again, control of the resources, and
because Morocco put his pride on claiming Mauritania for 10 years.
Mm.
Oh. Then they recognized the independence of Mauritania. Nothing happened. They did their pride for claiming big part of Algeria, half of Algeria. Then they recognized Algeria and nothing happened. I'm very sure that the same thing will happen with Western Sahara and nothing.
Well, let us see this by the power of radio. And so everyone has internet. The Bedouins have internet, again, wherever there's a service. And radio as well has been a part of that democratic, connected to the big world process. A tool for democracy and self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So any other, you know, again, you know, we're on our way out in the next minute or ish, 30 seconds or so, but, you know, it is a powerful time. All times await our dedication, but we want to join you in seeing the university, in seeing the autonomy, in seeing, you know, the Western Sahara also as a place of great Renaissance ingenuity, part of where we let us keep in touch, because part of the dedication of the show is who's got ingenious solutions, how you can make alcohol as a fuel, how you can run, you know, from almost anything. Many people dedicated to desert agriculture, you know, so we could see it blooming, and we could see it even as an ingenious place, you know, to be a mecca of where people come to.
I'm very sure instead of being a problem to the region, Western Sahara will be a blessing.
That is
will be a good news, where will be booming, will be good culture, good people, peaceful and democratic.
May it be so, inshallah. Thanks so much to Erica Bridgman in Berkeley and to Eileen Humphreys in Washington D.C. and of course to Ambassador Mohammed Yassin Baysat. May your dreams and your people's dreams be realized.
Oh, the honor was mine.
Pacifica is currently hiring a local election supervisor to oversee the listener and staff elections at your local station. If you or someone you know is interested in this position, you can view the detailed job description at elections.pacifica.org. To apply via email, send a cover letter, your resume, and 3 references to the attention of the National Election Supervisor to NES@pacifica.org. For more information about the upcoming local station board elections, see the election calendar, and sign up for periodic updates, visit the elections website at elections.pacifica.org.
Yes, I worry that you've been working too hard.
Sally, I must work tirelessly to bring scintillating, cutting-edge leftist political programming to this network. Now, can I get back to my office and my books?
C.S., let's get you out of your head and into your soul, out of the office and over to the KPFA Summer Arts Fair at the Craneway Pavilion on the Richmond waterfront, June 20th and 21st, from 10 to 6. A day immersed in the arts should serve as a marvelous curative tonic for lightening the weight of the world that you carry.
Well, I am...